This is the homily for the 30th Sunday in Ordinary Time, 2025, at St. Anselm's Abbey. The readings for the day's Mass were the Wisdom of Ben Sirach, chapter 35, verses 12 to 14 and 16 to 18. The second letter of St. Paul to Timothy, chapter 4, verses 6 to 8 and 16 to 18. And the Gospel of Luke, chapter 18, verses 9 to 14. The homilist was Father Gabriel Myers.
I begin with a radio segment. I would say I heard it on a podcast if I knew what a podcast was. This is a scene between two unnamed speakers who are unaware of being recorded. And so we listeners, the audience, deliciously eavesdrop on a dialogue between adult and child. The adult is a woman, and the child is about 5 years old. There is a reference to Teddy, who must be the adult's life partner or the child's step-parent. I will indicate the adult, who is taller, with a raised hand, and the child with a shorter hand, trying to appeal to the inner child in each of you. The adult must have asked, before we begin, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" The child says, "I think I want to marry a man and have children. I don't know what it's like to have children. What is it like?" The adult answers, "It is wonderful." The child asks, "Has it changed you?" The adult answers, "It has made me become responsible. Can I tell you a secret? I used to have a secret fear. It bothered me very much." The child, "Was it a brain bug?" "Brain bugs are dangerous." Adult, "It was a brain bug. I worried about dying. The thought of death terrified and haunted me. But when I got you, I had no time to worry about myself. I was so busy making sure you had what you needed, I could not obsess on myself. So the brain bug ran away and disappeared." The child, "Teddy helped you, I think. You love Teddy. You love Teddy a lot, don't you?" The adult, "Yes, you know that." "Do you love Teddy more than me?" "No, just in a different way. Love takes many forms." "Do you love me?" "Don't be silly. Mommy, I love you so much. I tell you all the time." There is laughter, and a male voice breaks in saying, "Public radio, asking the important questions." Public radio is a good thing. Though it is dangerous now, someone should be asking questions. Human history could be told by the questions that were asked. Socrates asked questions of his pupils. Lawyers ask questions of their witnesses, who are supposed to tell the truth. Dating sites ask questions by which people say what they hope for. Scripture asks questions from beginning to end. At the beginning, when forbidden fruit is eaten in Eden, God asks, "Where are you?" He is not asking for a location. He wants to know why his friends are hiding. God knows the answer, but wants to hear it from them. At the end of Scripture, the visionary asks, "Who is in the great multitude?" It is this amazing group at peace with each other and with other crowds. There seems to be no polarization, no threat of gun violence, despite all the people gathered. 6 days from now, on All Saints' Day, we will hear the answer. "These are they who have survived great trouble by washing their robes in the blood of the Lamb, which is a metaphor for Christ's protection. Scripture is our story. Scripture is not distant history, but current emotional dynamic. Scripture moves from guilt in Eden to glory in that last vision. There are many questions along the way. Young Isaac asks, "Where is the lamb for sacrifice?" At the burning bush, Moses asks, "Who shall I say sent me?" A young girl asks, "I have never been intimate with a man. How can I have a child?" A hostess asks, "Don't you care that I am pushed over the edge?" And surprisingly, a young man we previously thought self-sufficient asks, "Why have you abandoned me?" Perhaps that question gives him the capacity a few days later to ask the empathic question, "Why are you weeping?" All these symbolize our questions. Did I get the job? Will I have enough money to retire on? How can I put up with these people? Why don't I feel comfortable in the body I was born with? Is the test result positive or negative? Why can't my mother stop drinking? When will my son confide in me? What if I am deported to a continent I have never been to? How will I tell my parents? What if I'm pregnant? Will I get better? How much time do I have? Do you love me? Is death the end? To put these questions into words is to enter the whirlwind with Elijah, which feels like fire. A whirlwind is uncontrollable, signifying uncertainty whether there will be any answer at all, and maybe the answer will kill us. Yet we cannot truly live if we do not ask the questions which will make us fully human. To ask the important questions is the greatest thing in life, deserving our utmost attention. I myself am impatient with simplistic solutions, such as Jesus is the answer, or the catechism explains everything, or we must accept God's will and not ask questions. There are people who seem satisfied with those answers, but to me, they don't seem real. Similarly, when well-meaning sympathizers don't know what to say, they sometimes fall back on words that feel like a dagger. Everything happens for a reason. This is not helpful to one on the edge of the abyss. But asking the important questions leads to something even when there seems to be nothing there. On the last evening with their teacher, the disciples whisper among themselves, "We don't know what he means." And Jesus answers, "You have sorrow now, but will see me again. You will rejoice, and no one will take that joy from you. On that day, you will no longer need to ask questions." Thus, heaven is where our important questions are answered. If we have asked fiercely enough on earth, the answers will be worth waiting for. In St. Paul's greatest line, "Now we see through the window dimly, but then all will be brightness. Now we know partly, then we shall understand completely." The progression is from question to answer, guilt to glory, inner darkness to marvelous light. In today's gospel, we eavesdrop. Two characters speak as candidly as the girl and her mother on public radio. Each represents each of us, I think. When the Pharisee speaks, "Do you see yourself?" He is thankful, as you should be. God has preserved him from the gutter. He is generous, honest, and pure. Like you, he does his best. He is rigorously religious. But we do not admire him. We pity him. He tries so hard, but it is not working. He won't allow anything to break open the defensive shell. For then, he could stop justifying himself. He could ask the important question, "God, do you love me?" Am I lovable? If the answer is no or not sure, then Macbeth is right. You are a brief candle blown out. You are sound and fury, signifying nothing. The tax collector is everything we don't want to be. The tax collector is a liar, a thief. He is disgusting. He is like ICE agents doing the dirty work of an oppressive government. And he knows this. He has no illusions. Hunched over, he beats his breast. I am powerless, and there may be no hope for me. Inexplicably, this breakdown is a breakthrough. To expose the brain bug that you are terrified is when you begin to see a life vest bobbing on the waves. You use every ounce of strength to grab that life vest. You may be in the water a long time, but you are heading towards the upper deck, the place of knowing and understanding, of laughter and joy, of acceptance and completion. Call it heaven.